Campaign 90.1 on your FM dial, streaming live at weft.org. Listen to Rootstock Radio every Monday at 5:30 on WEFT Community Radio. Coming up next is In the Know, and we're actually going to have an encore presentation this week. In the Know is a WEFT-produced public affairs show that highlights locally available resources. Stay with us after that for Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater at 7, Monday night R&R at 8, live local music on WEFT sessions at 10, and recorded local music on Champaign Local 901 at 11. We're going to get to a brief underwriting announcement, and then we'll get to this week's edition of In the Know.
WEFT is supported in part by Kevin Elliott Counseling. Elliott Counseling Group has 35 counselors providing mental health services for individuals, families, couples, children, and groups. Evening and weekend appointments are often available immediately. Virtually all insurance, including State of Illinois employee insurance, is accepted, and there is also a self-pay sliding scale. Kevin Elliott or his staff can be reached at 398-9066 or ELLIOTTCounselingGroup.com.
And as I mentioned, we are going to start an encore presentation of In the Know. Thank you for listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial, streaming live at weft.org.
Going to be talking about healthcare. I have some people in the studio tonight who are going to be sharing their thoughts and opinions, which are, of course, those of the guests and the host and not of WEFT. I'm going to have them start over here with Dr. Robert Parker, where they're going to introduce themselves and share a little bit about their background.
Hi, Sherry. It's great to be with you this evening. I've spent 24 years with the Carle organization. My initial period was 18 years when we lived here in the community. And then I left Carle and went to Chicago and was a CEO in a safety net hospital, the Sinai Health System, and where I spent 9 years, and then came back to Carle strictly on the insurance side for another 6 years. I have a very broad background both in healthcare delivery and also in healthcare funding.
Okay.
So thanks for having me as well. So I am with Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. I've been there for going on 4 years now, and Claudia, our executive director, was supposed to be here, but she couldn't make it, so I'm going to be here on her behalf. And most of my duties are just healthcare enrollment, so we do enrollments year-round, whether Medicaid or Marketplace, as well as other benefits. And then we partner with community Rose Crans, formerly known as Community Elements, and Prairie Center, doing some reentry work.
Oh, and I do apologize. We just had a problem with our feed, so let's see if we can get back to where we were. Okay, just take me a moment to get us back there. And I do apologize for the interruption. And almost there. Okay, and away we go.
I've spent 24 years with the Carle organization. My initial period was 18 years when we lived here in the community. And then I left Carle and went to Chicago and was a CEO in a safety net hospital, the Sinai Health System, and where I spent 9 years, and then came back to Carle strictly on the insurance side for another 6 years. I have a very broad background both in healthcare delivery and also in healthcare funding.
Okay.
So thanks for having me as well. So I am with Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. I've been there for going on 4 years now, and Claudia, our executive director, was supposed to be here, but she couldn't make it, so I'm going to be here on her behalf. And most of my duties are just healthcare enrollment, so we do enrollments year-round, whether Medicaid or Marketplace, as well as other benefits. And then We partner with community Rose Crans, formerly known as Community Elements, and Prairie Center, doing some reentry work. I'm at the jails a few days of week out of the week, doing enrollments for folks that are about to be released as well.
Okay, awesome.
Thanks, Sherry, for having us and me to the show. So this is Irfan Ahmed, and I was blessed to be part of the team that initiated the Avicenna Community Health Center. Started off as the lead founder and the president, inaugural president, and now we have a new president at Avicenna. And that has been going on since 2009 in the community for a free clinic for the uninsured and underinsured. And my general background is in engineering, and so I work at the College of Engineering as a research faculty member with the Center for Nanotechnology. Mm-hmm. And that sort of knowledge also brings, I bring to the table in terms of taking a systems approach to healthcare delivery. Mm-hmm. And I worked on some of the projects related to biomedical applications and the like.
All right. So healthcare, obviously a very broad topic. There's a lot of facets to the healthcare that we have here in the United States. But just to kind of give some definitions to maybe, you know, round out the context of what we're going to be discussing tonight, there's different levels of being insured. There's uninsured, there's underinsured, and then there's people who obviously have what they're satisfied with as far as private insurance. But what exactly does it mean to be uninsured?
Well, at a certain level, Sherry, it just means that you don't have a source of third-party funding for the care that you're seeking.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, we see this all the time, new people coming in, just whether they are unfamiliar with the system, it's just the lack of exactly having a source of payment for their healthcare needs.
Okay, and so when we're talking about underinsured, what do we mean when we're talking about underinsured?
So if I were to define the uninsured, I would say having no access to healthcare, or minimal or no access to healthcare, quality healthcare in the community. And when we talk about underinsured, we mean that someone may carry some insurance, but they cannot pocket the whole expenses of the visit and or any other subsequent medication or medical devices. And for that, they would need some support.
Okay.
He makes a very good point in that we can talk about uninsured and underinsured in the context of funding, which is where we started, but we could also talk about it in the context of access, timely access to care, because there are many people who have actually a third-party source of funding. I can think of many in the Medicaid population, for mm-hmm. example, who actually have a source of funding, but they can't get care easily and accessibly outside of going to an emergency room.
And I think that that's a good point, and it definitely affects a lot of folks with access. For example, in dental care, it's covered through Medicaid to some degree, but the lack of contracts with the state and providers wanting to have Medicaid as a payee for them.
Right.
So that access is there, and it's built into the system, but it's still not adequate enough.
Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if somebody had an emergency dental situation, that might be covered versus, kind of what you would see is like a wellness visit, like just a regular visit to the dentist to make sure everything is okay. I know I had a friend who was also diabetic. I'm diabetic, and was talking about how they obviously had visits that were covered to an endocrinologist, but not to a dietitian. And that was one of the things that they wanted the endocrinologist wanted as supplemental to what she was providing was a visit with a dietitian to adjust the diet, and that wasn't actually covered. And the cost, I think, at that time, and this was several years ago, was I think around $125 to see the dietitian because it wasn't covered under Medicaid. So kind of like what all three of you are saying, you may have insurance. That doesn't mean necessarily that you have the right access to the right things based on what your specific, you know, health needs are. So this is kind of one of those debates. I think we see it in the news all the time now when we're talking about healthcare reform. As far as like your personal opinion, do you feel that healthcare is a right or a privilege?
So let me start on that. I feel that the World Health Organization assigns quality healthcare access for all people as a basic fundamental human right. And similarly, the United Nations Declaration Charter enshrines the universal access to quality healthcare, and to which US and other countries, all of the countries, are signatories to it. And this has been there since 1948. And so, I also understand that there is continues to be a debate in our country here that whether it's a fundamental right or whether it's a privilege or a right. To me, for a harmonious society and to have a compassion towards the sick and the elderly or anybody who needs help is actually a basic fundamental duty and for those who are the receiving end, a right. And for all of us, it's a right. Mm-hmm. And so the governments and the system has to actually provide that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with us. We say it all the time. It's healthcare for all, mm-hmm. Affordable, adequate, accessible. So it's definitely something that we feel that it is a right for everyone to have.
Mm-hmm.
And just to mix it up a little bit, one of the things that we struggle with is what is healthcare? You've got a public health version of healthcare that is different than the delivery of healthcare. And then within the delivery of healthcare, you've got the whole spectrum of medically necessary care versus discretionary care. And so it gets very complicated. I would take absolutely the position that public health, the basic right to live in a safe environment, a sanitary environment, and the basic need for immunizations and those aspects of that we know through evidence. Are essential mm-hmm. to being able to survive and thrive as being a right. Under our current laws, those services are already a right.
Mm-hmm.
Under the laws of EMTALA, which is emergency care, those services are already a right within the United States. What we're really arguing about today in the context of public policy is really all of the other aspects, if you will, of care delivery on that very broad and growing continuum of services.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, everybody looks at the United States as being one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and yet we still have this struggle over being able to provide what we're determining is a basic need. So what really should be the role of the government in providing access to health care?
You know, if we were to look at the world at large, of the 11 countries economically sound countries ahead of the U.S., at least 9 of them have healthcare coverage. And so that
means... And by that you mean universal health care.
Universal health care, right. Yeah, exactly. So that means that they have taken care of their populations and they're able to do that. So that raises the question, why is it that we cannot do it? And among the things that our colleague here was mentioning is the way the healthcare is delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a major issue with the healthcare delivery. And so even if we have the best healthcare system in the world, we are not still be able to reach out to the people who really need it the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so then it becomes an issue of haves and have-nots.
Mm.
So I question myself, and we should all question ourselves, why is it so?
Mm-hmm.
That we have large hospitals, we have large clinics, we have very advanced healthcare system where people actually come to be treated from outside the country. But why is it that we are not able to cater to the needs of our own population?
You know, in talking, talking about this subject for a really long time, when 2008 came around and we had a lot of issues with the economy, and there were some smaller businesses who had to pull back with their healthcare that they provided to their employees because they couldn't afford to do it anymore. And so that's where a lot of these free health clinics were the saving grace, was they were able to help those people maintain hopefully a basic standard, quality of life with their health needs. But a lot of it was, like you were saying, why are we getting to this place when we have such a country that seems to be able to sustain itself in many other areas? Healthcare is the one thing that we have dropping down. It's hard enough to teach some people, even when they have chronic illness, to be good about their, taking care of themselves. But for those who really do want to make sure that, because they know maybe they have a history of cancer in their family, they get tested when it's time to do that. And then yet they may not have access to do that testing. So where did we fall short? Where did we start to stumble as a country when it came to healthcare?
So if I were to, there may be a number of factors. I would say that we have not focused on the preventive healthcare. And that's what are the underlining reasons for people who get sick.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they get sick? So we have to look at the air quality, the water quality, the access to food or healthy food,
mm-hmm.
and proper care. Day-to-day care. So we have not addressed the social and the economic metrics which create a healthy society.
Mm-hmm.
We are just trying to put a band-aid at the other end on the curative side. So we have invested a lot of the time and funds on the curative side, but we have not paid attention to the preventive healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I would feel to talk about it, that Avicenna had luckily, had opted to go with the integrated preventive and curative healthcare approach right from the get-go. That means that every patient who comes through the door has to be seen not only by the physician, but by a nutritionist and exercise consultant.
Mm-hmm.
And we have started seeing good outcomes of that. And people, now patients who are coming in, who are just are scheduling meetings with the nutrition team and or the lifestyle management team, and they have improved on their both on their blood pressure numbers and their reduction in weight for obesity and their diabetic glucose levels and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you can see that. But this is just a drop in the ocean, or even a droplet in the ocean,
right?
Because this is a small clinic. We are talking about tens or hundreds of people we are talking about. So imagine if other clinics or other hospitals were to do it on a day-in and day-out basis, what difference it would make in the lives of the people. That means that both in terms of the talking about the environment that they live in, but not only that, but also creating patient awareness, education, like we have been now very good at smoking cessation activities and also curbing the drunk driving and so on and so forth. So why can't we not create these campaigns,
mm-hmm.
addressing that at a whole lot of level, which then prevent people to go to the ERs at the last stage of their disease or condition that they have, and putting more burden on the economic burden on the system.
So, No, go ahead, Dr. Parker.
No, I agree with many of his points. Up until, I don't know, I'll pick a date, up until probably the very late 40s, we'll just say 1950, essentially, I don't think it's a real over-exaggeration to say that whether or not you worked in the health department and your job was public health, or whether your job as a doctor in the delivery of health care was going on, it was all public health in those days. It was all about prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And then, guess what? We had an explosion of new goods and services that became available to health, to particularly the physician community, to the physician and hospital community.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, my friends have often laughed and said, Dr. Parker, you're really just a vendor of pharmaceuticals and medical devices.
Mm.
And so, but there's some truth to that. We are primarily find it, fix it people today as a doctor. We are not fundamentally trained today around prevention and public health. We're primarily trained to find the problem and fix the problem through the vending of pharmaceuticals, through the vending of medical devices. What we no longer have in the delivery system is a strong public health system, which can focus on prevention as their primary emphasis.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, you know, that I think about from when I was with the Champaign County Christian Health Center was we had a group of, when I did a resource fair in the school district, we talked about having a group there to do screenings for diabetes, because there's such a big portion of the population that's pre-diabetic. And so we felt like if the students were there for their school physicals, then could we then offer a health service for the parents while they're also there on site with their students to just see, you know, are you pre-diabetic? Some people don't even recognize the signs of what that is. But, you know, again, it's like you're saying, it's this idea of having these preventative measures available actively, you know, engaging the community that they're in, you know, doing these types of assessments, early assessments, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. You know, if you know that you have a history of diabetes in your family, are you making it a priority to get tested for that at some point when you're seeing your healthcare provider? And that's to say that somebody is willing to develop a relationship with a healthcare provider. I talk to parents sometimes, and a few of them have mentioned that they use the ER as their primary care provider for their child. Blows my mind. But that's a practice. If that's a practice for them, you can only imagine what the practice is for the parents themselves, if that's their practice for their students. So again, how do you foster this type of engagement between the healthcare world and the people who really need it when there is some correlation with the people who should be getting screening and should be getting assessment are the ones who are not as likely to utilize the healthcare field and those who are in it?
I definitely see that all the time as well, doing school events and just kind of tabling in all kinds of places. I think it definitely goes hand in hand that there's a social change that needs to happen,
mm-hmm.
And an understanding of healthcare and the system in general. Policy change along with the social change to kind of bridge that gap.
Mm-hmm.
And like, for example, a community like here where we have immigrant populations and, you know, people that aren't necessarily accustomed and they don't have that that connection to automatically know what a primary care provider is, mm-hmm. supposed to do or where to access that. I think that's the kind of outreach that we try to do. And it's definitely been happening, I think, more and more here. One of the groups that I work with is the Public Health District and their iPlan, which is the state of Illinois' plan on how do we, you know, lower diabetes and chronic illnesses, and kind of a plan of attack for the preventative side, so it's not just putting a Band-Aid on it.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen that go down in some instances through, you know, programs and better outreach, culturally appropriate and linguistics and all of that. So I think it's a lot more than just the basic system that we familiar with. So it's an expansion, it's a wraparound service. It's not just the healthcare, hospitals, clinics, but yeah, it's the education system, it's the criminal justice system. It's a combination of all of those being entry points into the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
There's something Claudia says a lot. It's like a no wrong door policy. Like, there's always going to be an interaction where you can get to where you need to go, regardless of whether you know. Culturally, for example, there's a lot of folks that don't understand or they use a different way to describe healthcare. And like you said, the ED is where a lot of people go for primary care because they aren't familiar with or aren't aware of what's available.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's not just awareness. Access is a very complicated issue. You have to get to the place. So transportation is an issue. When I was at Sinai, we built out a lot of community clinics that had very high no-show rates, despite the fact that we were spending large amounts of money to try to educate people about our services that were available. When we started interviewing our patient population, one of the reasons that they were going to the emergency room is because there was a bus stop right outside the emergency room, whereas it was much more difficult in some cases for them, to get to some of our community clinics. So access becomes a really complex issue. The other issue is time. It's certainly no secret that an emergency room has got a lot of diagnostic capability. So if you're not feeling well and you want to basically get worked up, going to the emergency room is a place where you can go. You may have to wait a while, but you're going to get lab work. You're going to be able to get fairly sophisticated imaging if necessary, and you can get all of that this evening. Whereas if you go to a clinic in the community, it'll be spread out over several visits, and you'll get a little bit in the clinic, and you'll get a little bit at perhaps the local hospital. And consumers know that. And so I think that all of this speaks to the importance of having navigators, of having sort of a healthcare consultant that you can kind of work with to help navigate what turns out to be a very complex system.
Mm-hmm. So when we're talking about, you know, how to fix this, you know, a lot of it is we have the Affordable Care Act now, which some people say they can't afford. So how do you make this access better? Should employers be required by law to provide health insurance to their employees?
Well, I can jump into this. Certainly healthcare needs to be funded somehow. Obviously, the system that we have is a patchwork system, which is a system of the government subsidizing the cost of health care, the consumer perhaps paying some out of pocket, and the employer paying something. I don't know that an employer has to be required to pay it, but the importance of third-party funding is, I think, a very very important given the underlying cost of healthcare today.
Okay.
You know, I would agree and partially, and then I would also add that for an employer, he or she has to invest or vest into his or her employees, and healthcare is one component of that. If you have healthy employees, then you have good productivity. Otherwise, they are sick, and so. But the definitely in the issues of smaller businesses, the healthcare costs can drive them down. And so there has to be a number of other partner funding sources, which would make sure that they have access to healthcare. So I think that's why it's necessary that we all chip in.
So I guess the one thing that happened in 2008 was the affordability went down. And so I think that was a big problem that we saw with, for instance, there was a panel that was over at the Urbana Free Library, and we were, the Champaign Christian Health Center, County Christian Health Center was there. And we were talking about, you know, the ACA was on the horizon, and everybody kind of saw this as being the cure for healthcare problems that were going on. But there was a person, one of the panelists, who brought up something and said, but is it going to be treated kind of like a cafeteria, where the government will say, kind of what you were saying, healthcare has to be provided, but what does that healthcare, how is it defined? What exactly do we mean when we say we're forcing people to have healthcare, and there will be a penalty if you don't have healthcare? Or, you know, one of the people in the audience said, I would gladly pay for healthcare. You know, I would be the first person to sign up for universal healthcare, but how do I know I'm getting what we really need to get? And so one of the questions was, is mental health going to be covered in that? And so that was one of the things after the ACA rolled out was, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that each state was allowed to decide if they were going to opt in for mental health. Was that the case?
I think mental health parity was built in as one of the protections right. of the ACA.
Okay.
So you couldn't be charged more for the mental health portion of it than like your basic primary care.
Okay, but it was still built in as part of the health care you would receive?
Part of the big,
yeah. Okay.
It was part of the benefit top, the 10 essential benefits.
Oh, okay.
One of those, yeah.
Right.
But I think that was still the debate was, you know, are people going to be getting what they need under the ACA? And as far as what you've seen now that we've had the ACA for a while now, how do you think people are getting what they really need under the ACA? Or, I mean, it's kind of a living document per se, where you're always going to be evolving a little bit. But I think that's the debate now under our new administration, is that the old way is not working. We need to do something different.
Well, the benefit design, let's just separate the cost of healthcare from the benefit design of healthcare. In other words, what's the contract offer? The contract under ACA is very broad. Both on the prevention side as well as on the treatment side. You would be hard-pressed to find a benefit design in the market that's richer than the benefit design as offered through the legislation of ACA. Now, you then get into how much of the responsibility of that benefit design is built into the base premium versus how much of the responsibility of that benefit design is paid for out of pocket by the individual who holds the policy.
Okay.
And that's really the point of contention, because there are many who believe that there is too much out of pocket responsibility attached to many of those plans, and therefore it makes the plan unaffordable to the holder of the plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a continual harangue in the marketplace by some that says that the out-of-pocket responsibility should be de minimis, and that most of the benefit design should be paid for out of the base premium. But this is a bone of contention that's within ACA.
Mm-hmm.
So if I would like to add that, I mean, quoting from our experience with Avicenna, that we were encouraging our patients at the time of the signing up. So we set up booths there at the clinic. So every patient comes in, we help them to sign up for the ACA. And then that has been going on since the rollout of the ACA. But over the years, then what we have noticed is that people have started coming back to us, the free clinics, because of one, increased premium, two, because they do not get access or appointments with physicians, and if they do, those are 2 months to 3 months down the road. And so those reasons bring them back to the free clinics. And mm-hmm. so we have started seeing a spike in the number of patients that are coming through the clinics, just such as Avicenna, And as opposed to, there was definitely a period between 2010 and 12 when there were the number of patients coming through the clinic was a little bit reduced.
Mm-hmm.
But now after a few years, after at least it settled down. So my take is, and this is my personal opinion, that the Affordable Care Act in all its intent and purposes was and is a good effort. But after having we have figured out what are the associated issues with it, it should be those should be rectified rather than totally revamping it or totally going back to the zero.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I mean, I've been doing open enrollment since open enrollment one. So we're certified application counselors. We were navigators for a short period of time. It's definitely not perfect, mm-hmm. but I think the it did a good job at defining healthcare. It set standards, whereas there were no standards before. And plans picked and chose what they wanted to cover, lifetime caps, benefit caps, all of that. So it definitely set a good standard, whether it was adequate to fulfill like everyone's needs. There's always room for improvement there. But with the mental health, they created mental health parity, and that kicked in a little after the basic rollout.
Mm-hmm.
And then Medicaid expansion was a big part of it. That's the part that states opted in or out of. So that was one of the big factors in how many people actually got coverage through the ACA. I think people forget also about the patient protection part of the ACA, which didn't just set standards for the ACA plans, but it actually went beyond that to cover private insurance through employers and individual folks who wanted to go through a broker, for example. So I think it did definitely set the definition of, or it started to help define and kind of put a focus on what healthcare is or should be.
Mm-hmm. But no, I think that is a good, sorry, Dr. Parker, I think that's one point that really we should see as the silver lining. That's a great point that you made, that it did start setting standards in the healthcare field for how, you know, how this should hopefully continue to look as we, you know, revise here and there. Because I do think that is one of the complaints that, you know, when we saw people at the Christian Health Center, is this idea that, you know, it's so vastly different depending on before the ACA on what you would get if you had private insurance anyways. And so if we can start maybe setting more of a precedent for how healthcare should look, if we're looking really to stay, you know, with this fidelity to universal healthcare, what it should really look like and what it should really mean. Go ahead, Dr. Parker.
No, I just, healthcare has always been a regulated business. It was regulated at the state level. And prior to ACA, the insurance companies were able to put out lots of different plan designs under lots of different price points, in other words, the cost of the plan,
mm-hmm.
and be in compliance with the regulatory standards of that state, whatever state we're talking about. And so there were lots of plans in the marketplace. Some were inexpensive plans, some were very expensive plans, all of which were regulated by the state Department of Insurance. What happened under ACA is that became centralized, and you moved from many different plan designs to fundamentally four plan designs. And that has, I mean, we see plenty of articles and we see plenty of people who simply today say, I can't afford one of those four plan designs.
Mm.
I could afford a plan design when I had more choices, but it might not cover mental health,
mm-hmm.
or it might not cover infertility treatment, or it might not cover something, but at least I can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Today, because the benefit designs are so rich on those four different choices in the marketplace, it's really above what some people believe they can afford.
So, you know, looking at the idea of you know, providing universal health care, or, you know, mandating that it's available through employers. Now look on the consumer side, as far as, you know, some people weren't overly excited about this idea of being penalized financially if they didn't take a plan. So if it's available and, you know, there's good designs out there, should the regular consumer be forced to have health care?
I mean, we are accounted for that we have freedom to do what we choose to do, right? But at the same time, your freedom ends where your nose ends. That means that there is there are implications for others around you for your health. I mean, even if you are not going to take care of your health, somebody else would have to. And as a responsible citizen, each one of us should be responsible to take care of our health through having an insurance, which would cover, which would give us access to healthcare, so that if some catastrophe occurs, an accident occurs, or some sickness occurs, that you are taken care of, mm-hmm. and not somebody else is going to take care of you. Or if you were smoking hard for all your teenage and youth years, and then you expect the system to bear the brunt mm-hmm. of your healthcare costs. So that means that every citizen, every adult should have a healthcare plan. But those should be, again, manageable so that people can afford to have them. I mean, there's no use to have these high insurance plans where majority of the people cannot afford it. Mm-hmm. And then it's back to square one. Mm-hmm.
And this gets back to a certain extent to this whole public health component versus the find it, fix it component of healthcare. Public health per se is not expensive, and it has a huge return on investment. So if plan designs were primarily limited to a public health plan design, it would be inexpensive and everybody would have it. Mm-hmm. The issue is, or one issue is, the appropriateness of socially engineering, okay, the other end of the continuum that some people want and some people don't want. But yet, under a socially engineered structure, everybody has to pay into it. Mm-hmm. And so the argument by some is that when we require everybody to buy an expansive benefit plan, that it represents social engineering to an extreme. Mm-hmm.
So some people think that, and again, I think a lot of people go by headlines a lot. They don't really look into the actual, okay, is this legit? A lot of people think that pharmaceutical companies are kind of the driving force behind how the ACA is going to be revised. But they've also thought that pharmaceutical companies are the ones who drive a lot of the problems that happen with insurance and healthcare. the one example being when the CEO of, forgive me, I can't think of when they had, excuse me, this, you know, EpiPen that, you know, kids need for when they have allergic reactions, and it went from what, $200, I think, to $600, and there was a huge, you know, argument over who's really driving our healthcare. You know, this isn't something that, you know, is not necessarily a life, you know, this is something that somebody needs to live versus, you know, maybe a pill to, you know, lose weight or something like that. And so the argument was, you know, who is the driving factor behind our healthcare right now? Because how could you allow, where are the rules and regulations? Where's the oversight, you know, when it comes to being able to bump up something that a child needs to survive should they have an allergic reaction, from, you know, somewhat of an affordable range to a range where parents were saying, I can't afford that. How do you expect us to do this? So what would be your answer if somebody says, well, it's just the pharmaceutical companies who are changing our healthcare?
You know, I read an article a few years ago in New York Times, and it said that the the cost of getting somebody as a child got hit or something and had a little bit of a bruise which needed six or so stitches, the cost of those stitches, which is a basic requirement or a basic need at that point, it was $1,500. So you could see that there is something wrong with the system, where the cost of putting a five stitches on a child's chin would cost you $1,500. And similarly, there are other examples of that. So that means that somebody is benefiting mm-hmm. from these large the companies and so on and so forth. From so one example that was more recent is the $69 billion merger. I think it's not yet approved. I'm not sure on that. CVS and Aetna. So they are talking about that they will bring more the healthcare hubs at the CVS stores and so on and so forth. Of course, the proof of the pudding is when we get to see it and eat it. But at this point, I mean, it is too good to be true that such mergers or such creating such the big monsters would help the healthcare industry. And then same with these costs of these pharmaceutical drugs and so on and so forth. But at the same time, sometimes the pharmaceutical companies also get a bad rap because they are the ones who are producing these. And it takes almost $1 billion or more to get a drug to the market, and takes 10, 12 years mm-hmm. From clinical trial stages to that. So there is definitely the cost associated with that. But then where do you draw the line? Mm-hmm. And that's where the question is. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's well said. You cannot, whether you're talking pharmaceuticals or medical devices, you can't separate Wall Street from this conversation. Mm-hmm. The medical device companies, all of which are for profit, many of which are publicly traded, the pharmaceutical companies are publicly traded, the insurance companies are publicly traded companies, there is a margin that's required. And we're talking about a capitalistic economy where healthcare is, you know, soon to be 20% of the GDP. And so you can't, and most of the cost of R&D is borne on the back of the United States. The product is distributed worldwide, but part of the reason that you've got you're not sharing much of the R&D in many of the other countries is because they are highly socialized. They have a defined formulary, and they basically push the United States to basically a lowball price if the product is going to be distributed in their country. Mm-hmm. And so the R&D cost is disproportionately borne on the backs of U.S. citizens. And that's a, I'm not a Trump supporter necessarily, but I am saying that's been a theme of our current sitting president, that we're not going to be able as a country to bear all of the cost of R&D without our neighbors sharing in that cost.
Mm. So with this, you know, there's many angles that people come at when it comes to healthcare as far as what the actual solutions are, as if to say there's, you know, maybe even a handful of solutions. I feel like there's more than that actually has to be applied, whether it's public health, whether it's access, you know, there's a lot of different ways we can come at this. But the ACA for now is available. And I think what we have deadlines coming up right now with the ACA enrollment.
December 15th, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we will go to our consumer healthcare expert. If somebody needs help with enrolling, who should they go to? Can they contact you, or are there other third parties that are helping with this also?
I think right now it's definitely limited, and we're on our last week, so but they definitely can call Champaign County Healthcare Consumers. There's a few of us on staff that are certified application counselors, and we are taking appointments. We're extending hours. I believe you can also go to Francis Nelson, and then they have navigators there as well. Whether it's via email, short conversation, a lot of folks don't need the full appointment. So trying to kind of figure out who needs how much help. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the deadline is Friday, so it's pretty much down to the last week. Figuring out a lot of the questions that come up is eligibility based on income. So folks might not know that they are eligible for Medicaid, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we can resolve fairly quickly and still have appointments for ECA marketplace specific clients that need to actually, you know, sit there and go through a formulary and look through the primary care provider list, make sure that everything's in network and that their costs are going to be affordable to them. So that's kind of the key that we're working on right now.
If somebody misses the deadline on Friday, when's the next time they're able to get into the ACA?
So there will be some special enrollment options throughout the year if certain circumstances occur. So getting married, life-changing tax household, things change, you are eligible throughout the year to apply for that. There's also exemptions. Otherwise, you're pretty much locked out of the marketplace until the next enrollment, which we're hoping November 1st again would be available.
Mm-hmm. So kind of one last question for, and this is more of a loaded question, so if you don't have the perfect answer, nobody does, I think, at this point. What would you say is the priority when we look at how we're going to try to reform healthcare? What do you think is the priority right now? Is it access? Is it affordability? Is it, you know, like you said, understanding health outcomes better, training for professionals right now? What do you think our number one priority or should be at this point?
So I would definitely put a big focus on Medicaid. So I think in our community, we're doing a pretty good job at the whole those other things. But I think the fact that Medicaid's being attacked through healthcare reform, cuts and all of that. So it's not something that can come back if it gets cut. Mm-hmm. Cuts mean that it's pretty much just going to go away. And that just puts all of the burden on the consumer, mm-hmm. On the state to figure out, you know, pick and choose who's going to get the privilege of having healthcare as opposed to right. having the right to have healthcare.
Yeah. Dr. Parker?
I'm going to emphasize prevention and public health as being our priority, and I think the delivery system of prevention and public health should be separate from the delivery system of find it, fix it care.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's too much secondary gain in the find it, fix it component of healthcare when they take responsibility for the, or take the so-called responsibility for prevention. And so I believe this country would be best served by having an extremely strong public health system that emphasizes prevention and childhood immunizations and education. And I think public health should be the primary access point for every U.S. citizen, and that the delivery of health care on the find it, fix it side of the continuum should be a separate system.
Yeah, I would take a little bit of a different view on that. And coming from an engineering standpoint, what we think is taking a systems approach towards healthcare delivery. And that's why this model of integrated preventive and curative healthcare is the need, because the system had existed until this point as a curative healthcare system. But the part which was missing is the preventive healthcare. And so those two have to be integrated. Otherwise, we are just putting a band-aid on the health of the individuals. But there are so many lessons that have been learned through the Affordable Care Act, and we should not let it go by the wayside, and rather put efforts to improve it and to address all of those questions. And also, as Dr. Parker earlier said, that access to the healthcare is key. So if you cannot get on the bus And that's why when we were locating our Avicenna, these locations were very important to us. So one of the things that we looked at is which MTD routes were served and whether they are serving them on Sundays, afternoons or not, and how many buses are running through that point, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. Because we could have gotten another location at a cheaper rates, but we opted to go with the where the population can get to us quickly and right in the neighborhoods that they need us the most.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exactly, but we are just a drop in the ocean, as I said. So there are more of these the clinics and entities needed. But there has to be general awareness that we talked about from the get-go, education and awareness at all levels, at the employer stage, at the hospital stage, and wherever we go. I mean, in the libraries and so on and so forth, so that people can take ownership of their health. This is an era of personalized medicine. So so this total blanket prescriptions would not work, have not worked.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to individualize it at the patient level, at the each organ level, and so on and so forth, using all the advances that have been made or are being made. And so that's, again, coming back to a systems approach towards healthcare delivery is needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot of debate that's going to go on for a very long time when it comes to universal healthcare and what, you know, the consumer is entitled to, and even how, like you said, how that looks with the access, if people are taking all of those things into consideration. But, you know, hopefully as things go along, we'll see improvements rather than complete cuts where people don't have access at all. And for those who don't sign up for the Affordable Care Act, there are still services available to you. We have the Champaign County Christian Health Center. We have Avicenna. We have the Love Clinic. Those are three free clinics here in the Champaign-Urbana area that are wonderful clinics, always ready and willing to help with any type of issue, health issue that you might have. So there will definitely be a place for them, I think, for a while until we get everything figured out. But thank you guys again for being on the show tonight. Definitely appreciate talking about this huge topic. And of course, thank you to the listeners for tuning in. Tonight's show will be archived on RadioFreeAmerica.com, my personal Facebook page, as well as Tumblr at InTheKnow217. You can also catch some of my past shows that are archived on the weft.org public affairs webpage. You can go there and catch some of the previous ones. We'll also be rolling a few past shows over the holidays when I will not be here. But also feel free to contact us if you have any questions. Thanks again, guys, for being on the show tonight. I definitely appreciate it.
Thank you.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my I am wise to leave them open for so long. As I have wandered through this world, and as each moment has unfurled, I've been waiting to awaken from these dreams. People go just where they I never noticed them until I got this feeling that it's later than it seems. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what you see. I hear their cries. Just say if it's too late for me. We'll be right back.
This is WEFT Champaign 90.1 on your FM dial, streaming live at weft.org. This has been the WEFT